We're Amy and Christina, two friends who got pregnant at the same time, created an Instagram to vent about how much we didn't know, and realized, wow, a lot of you are in the same boat.
Who knew? Not us. Once we realized we weren't the only people frantically Googling things at 3 a.m., we thought, let's go bigger.
So here we are with a podcast. We're bringing in experts on pregnancy, parenting, and women's health because, let's be honest, we're all just trying to survive this wild ride.
Whether you're here for real talk, advice, or just some adult conversation, welcome to What I Wish I Knew.
In today's episode, we are hanging out with Ashley Daly, a registered nurse and part of the Mama Coach team, who's all about helping families navigate the chaos of pregnancy, postpartum, and early parenting.
Ashley is one of the warmest, most down-to-earth people we've met, and we had the best time chatting about baby sleep, feeding struggles, and finding your rhythm as a new parent. We're so excited for this episode. Let's dive right in.
Well, Ashley, thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate you taking the time and chatting with us. We're excited to dive into the topic of sleep because, we're both in the thick of it with relatively new babies. So thank you so much for talking with us today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So let's just dive right in. We always like to start to hear a little bit about you, what your journey is. What do you do? What are you passionate about? How'd you get there?
Okay. So my name is Ashley, and I am a registered nurse. My background in nursing comes from working in the NICU. So when I actually was a child, my mom told me that I never watched cartoons. I was a weird child. I love to watch baby special delivery and anything that had a woman giving birth, or just that was my jam as a six-year-old kid. And throughout schooling and everything, I used to do lots of volunteer work with the Kiwanis organization, kind of grew up in Kiwanis. And that was when I lived in Jamaica. So I grew up in Jamaica, moved to the U.S. about 11 years ago now, and kind of dived right into nursing. So I worked in the NICU for 5 years. I worked as a staff nurse for 3 years, and then 2 years I did travel nursing. And in the midst of me doing travel nursing, I had a period of time where there were like no travel jobs available, which was a little wild and crazy. No travel jobs. So I needed money. I had bills to pay, and I picked up a nannying job. And it was a mom who, she had a 6-week-old baby. She was going back to work, and she needed help. She needed someone to watch the baby. So I was like, hey, I'm free for a couple weeks. I can help like bridge that gap for you and until you're able to find a more permanent nanny. And so we did that. And at the end of our time together, that mom looked at me and she goes, you need to be a baby coach. She's like, you are way more than a nanny to me. And you're a registered nurse. You have the back. Like, you need to do this, like start a business and you should be a baby coach. And I said to her, no. I am a nurse and nurses just work in the hospital. So I don't really know what you're talking about. And then that just like, for whatever reason, it stuck with me. And so I went to Google that same night. I'll never forget it. Went to Google. And when I went to Google, I found the Mama Coach. Now, the Mama Coach is a brand. It's a international brand, actually, that was founded in Canada. And it's a brand of nurses where we help families with all realms of parenthood, from preconception to, you know, during the prenatal period to the postpartum period and so far beyond. And there's really no end date of when your postpartum period will end. So it's hard to say and beyond. But my passion is really working with newborns, helping families with that transition from hospital to home, helping you understand what normal newborn behavior is and what it looks like, and how you can set up routines that feel sustainable and manageable for your family. So I really love working with newborns, babies, with feeding, breastfeeding, bottle refusal, sleep, starting solids. That is all my jam. And I just love empowering families with education and helping them feel more confident to live their day-to-day life with their babies and know that they're doing the best that they absolutely can.
That is a fantastic story. And I'm picturing this little six-year-old you, like, I don't even know, on YouTube being like, what's a normal birth look like? Like, just watch a C-section today. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I actually remember sitting and watching these.
That's so funny. Well, you definitely were following the path you were meant to take. I guess that's a beautiful thing.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I want to make sure one of the topics that I think is always top of mind for obvious reasons is sleep. Because us parents, we are tired. Infants don't sleep a lot. So I'd love to sort of talk more about the sleep side of what you do. Why do you think it's such a confusing topic to begin with, or a hard topic to begin with?
I think it's so hard because, number one, there is so much information out there. We are in a generation of information overload. So that makes it extremely challenging. And because there is so much information out there, it definitely causes a parent to second guess themselves. You lose that touch with your gut. And so that makes it extremely hard for you to like listen to your gut to say, this doesn't feel right or this feels right. But it's mostly you see things on the internet like, oh, well, your baby's up 6 times a night. That's normal. It's normal for a baby to wake overnight. And you as a parent intuitively can say, yeah, that might be normal. That doesn't feel normal for my, like, it just doesn't feel normal for my baby and it doesn't feel normal for my family. So that makes it really hard when you have all that information out there. Like, it makes it really hard for you to actually connect to your intuition and figure out if you need to get support or not get support.
So if someone came to you in that example and was like, Ashley, like my baby's waking up 7 times a night. I don't feel like this is normal. What would you say to them and how would you help them?
So I would really say, you know, in general, yes, it is normal for babies to wake overnight. It's normal for humans to wake overnight. We all do wake overnight. No one sleeps through the night. We wake about 4 to 6 times overnight, and that is considered normal. Those are normal night wakings. Now, what can become disruptive is when those wakings are more prolonged. So I would want to know, how long is your baby staying awake when they wake up in the middle of the night? What are they waking and doing? Are they waking crying? Are they waking hungry? Are they waking and seeming like they're uncomfortable? Are they waking and just seeming like they're still really, really tired, almost like they're trying to connect their sleep cycles and having a really hard time? So there's a lot more information that I want to know before I'm even able to say, let me help you and let's create some actionable steps to get you more sleep, which that would likely be the goal. But it definitely would take a little bit more assessment and understanding what feeding looks like for that baby, what the day-to-day routine looks like for that baby. Lots of, you know, what does your parenting style look like? So it's diving into a lot different topics.
Do you also think that there's a cultural element? Like, I love knowing that you grew up in Jamaica. Yeah. Now you live in Florida. You work for a Canadian man.
Yes.
Right? Are there cultural differences when it comes to sleep and sleep expectations as well?
1,000%. 1,000%. There is... I feel like it's a lot harder in the U.S. Simply because there is that challenge with, you know, not having lots of maternity leave. If it is normal for a baby to be up multiple times a night and a mom has to go to work the next morning, having a baby up 4 to 6 times a night isn't something that's going to be really manageable for her. Like, she has to go and work a full time. And regardless of if she's back to work or if she's a stay-at-home mom, like, you're still in that 24-hour care of a baby, right? So I feel like it's harder in the U.S. simply because of, honestly, a lack of a village. There's not that village mentality here. And it's funny, when I talk with my family that I grew up in Jamaica with, even their experience is so much different when they were raising me, raising my cousins. Like, they had that immediate village. It wasn't a question. So there's definitely some cultural differences.
So interesting, because that comes up, I can see Christina's face going, mm-hmm. in multiple conversations. And I mean, we've talked to people in very different fields over the past several months. And the idea of community and like family networks and support comes up in almost every single conversation. It really does, because we were not meant to parent by ourselves. We were not meant to do that. So it's a really interesting point outside of the maternity leave conversation that in general in the U.S. we just were lone wolfing it so much more than other places do?
We all have like different strengths. Like Amy is really good at giving her kids a sleep routine, whereas I am a little bit more all over the place. And like, I'm really good in the kitchen. Like I can throw things together, no problem. No offense, Amy. Like
you're
getting better at
recipe. Let's just put it that way. The recipe.
I sent her a recipe the other week and she was like, so what did you do at this stage? Or did this happen? And I was like, I don't know. I just kind of threw it together. You know what I mean? But when you have a village, like everybody has their own strengths that you can play into is the point. And like, that's really hard when your immediate family doesn't have that.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I think that's part of the hard part. And also like, if you think about historically how we dealt with baby sleep, like we didn't all have separate rooms like back in the day. You know what I mean? So like even co-sleeping has been a different kind of topic that has come up. We have another friend that also had a baby just a few days after Amy did. And we're all on a group chat together. And, you know, she sleeps differently than the way that, you know, Amy's daughter sleeps. And because my baby was in the hospital with RSV, I'm still holding her at night. You know, so I didn't anticipate co-sleeping, but here I am, you know, and it's like you think back to how it must have been.
Yeah.
You know, when people were living in like one room and sharing one bedroom, how did it work then? And then how does that impact what we're doing today? Does that come up in like your medical literature? I don't know, like what you learn.
No, it does not come up in medical literature at all. They do not talk about what other cultures go through or like what things look like generations past. But to your point about, you know, you never expected to co-sleep, you are in a pool of about 90% of other families who are currently co-sleeping. Like they never planned. That was never a plan. And you can always be the perfect parent when you're not a parent. So right now I am the perfect parent out there. So whenever families listen to me, I tell them, take everything I say with a grain of salt because I don't have your experience and your intuition is what's going to make this a lot stronger than anything else. Like you tell me what works and feels like it's not working because right now I'm just I'm the perfect parent.
When you were talking about what you want to learn about families and as you're trying to help them, you talked about feeding schedules, like what is their feeding schedule? What does their daily routine look like, et cetera? I want to talk a little bit about that because I think something I didn't know going into parenthood was how the daytime affects the nighttime and not just in terms of like, oh, when did they nap or whatever, but specifically feeding, how a baby eats and how that affects their sleep. I knew nothing about that. I just thought that like, oh, stuff them as much as you can before bed and they'll sleep longer.
No, you're not alone in that. You're not alone in that. So there are, again, there's so much information out there on the internet, right? But the way I teach parents is think of a baby's caloric needs, like filling this bottle. The more frequently and effectively they're feeding throughout the day, that bottle's going to fill up. Feeding on demand, feeding based off when baby tells you that they're hungry throughout the day, following that and encouraging like a full feed every time they go to the breast or to the bottle, that's going to fill their caloric cup to where they don't need as much food overnight. There is zero research that tells us the age or specific time when a baby no longer needs their nighttime feeds. So for example, I had a mom that reached out because her 3-month-old was waking really, really early in the morning, was sleeping great, sleeping like I think 10 hours overnight, but waking really early in the morning. Asked some more questions. It's because the baby's probably hungry. It's a 3-month-old. They're likely not ready to sleep that long stretch without having some food in their tummy. So there's times that baby's probably waking overnight from hunger. And if we soothe them, they'll likely go back to sleep, but they're likely hungry. We soothe them, they go back to sleep, and then they're up early parts in the morning because it's like, all right, now I've gotten all my sleep. I'm hungry. Like, you need to feed me now. So feeding definitely affects it in that regards where you do want more frequent and effective feeds during the daytime. I've heard on the flip side, families that tell me, oh my gosh, my baby's a wonderful napper during the day. They take like 4-hour naps during the day. And then overnight, they're up like frequently to eat because now they're doing something called reverse cycling. Super, super common with, you know, as babies get a little bit older and they're more aware of their surroundings, they don't want to eat as much during the day because everything else going on in the daytime is more interesting than eating, right? So they get into this cycle where they're snacking, like taking these really short feeds during the day and napping really long periods over during the day as well, because overnight they're up every hour eating because they never did that. Yeah, they never did that during the day. Oh, now it flips to the night. On the flip side, for newborns, which are a little bit, they just sleep erratically and they sleep in their own little fashion. Like there's no rhyme or reason for anything that they do, apart from the fact that they have no developed circadian rhythm. And they will take really, really long naps sometimes. Like they will nap anywhere from 20 minutes to 4 hours. So if you've ever heard that myth, like never wake a sleeping baby, I would wake newborns. I would wake them and I would wake them during the day because they sleep so much and they have that day-night confusion. They don't know when day from night is. And so, yes, you know, if they are not feeding during the day and they're taking these really long naps, then it's going to make sense that during the night, they're going to want to eat.
Yep. I was always under the impression that, especially for newborns, you always want to wake them to eat until at least they've reached their birth weight again. But it sounds like that could continue for past when they've reached their birth weight. Like you still, if you're still trying to kind of get them to learn more day from night, like, yeah, wake them up, feed them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's more so. So the reason that we usually say until birth weight is because we don't trust babies. Like we know it's really important for them to get back to their birth weight, especially in those first 2 weeks. So during the first 2 weeks, we're like, you know, your baby's going to be really sleepy because it's normal, right? It's normal for a newborn to sleep up to 19 hours a day. We know that that's normal, but we also know that they need to eat. And if we don't wake them up, they might go these long periods where they don't eat. And then that's going to affect their weight gain. So during those first 2 weeks, yes, we want to wake them up. And beyond the 2 weeks, if baby still seems really, really sleepy and they're not waking up at least every 3 hours to feed, yes, wake them up.
My daughter is now, she's almost 3 months, and she is the sleepiest child I have ever met in my entire life. I mean, it's like if she cries, the default is because she's tired. She's just not like a great eater. She'll eat if you present it to her. Like she'll eat, she eats a decent amount, but she's not passionate about food the way that my son was. And it was a little alarming how much she slept. And like you said, erratically, it would be like 4 hour naps and then she'd be awake for 15 minutes and then take another 2 hour nap, then be awake for an hour and then take an hour nap. Like there's no rhyme or reason. And that is normal, it sounds like, but it feels very weird.
Yes, it does. And then that's when I say to you, look at the overall 24 hour rhythm. How many hours of sleep is your baby getting in 24 hours? If they're getting within that normal range of about 17 to 19 hours, then what you're describing is so normal.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some of the most common questions or challenges that families have when they come to you?
So a lot of it is about getting babies on a schedule, especially during the daytime, which is very hard. I will put that out there. It's hard to get babies on a schedule for the simple reason that babies can't tell time. They cannot read a clock. They can't tell time. So my favorite thing to do with families is find routines that work. So instead of going based off schedules, we use routines. And routines are going to be a lot more flexible for babies, especially for newborns, right? So I know there's a million and one routines out there, and I'm learning that there's some that are better than others and some that are not as not as great. So there's routines called like the eat, play, sleep. Have you heard of that routine? Or Yeah. So that's one routine. My favorite routine that I teach families about is called the mama's routine. And it's one that is especially helpful for breastfed babies just because breast milk is digested so quickly. And that's a routine that I've gotten really good feedback from my breastfeeding families because they say it makes me feel like I'm gaining some more control over my day and I don't have to stick to this certain time. And so what that looks like is baby wakes to start their day. within the first 10 minutes of them waking to start their day or waking up from a nap, you offer a feed. Then you go into your activity. They're having a wake window. You go into your activity. So whether that's tummy time, going for a walk, reading a book, singing, whatever your family does, keep doing it. And know, like, keep an eye on timing, because we know that babies can only tolerate certain amounts of wake time each time they're awake, right? So for a newborn, we know that they can tolerate anywhere from about 45 to 60 minutes. So allow your baby to, you know, engage in those activities while they're awake. Then around 20 minutes before you put them down for your next nap is when you want to start your nap, like a mini nap routine. And you can start that routine with a feed. So offering a feed about 20 minutes before you put them down for a nap. Then you go into another mini activity, which is a diaper change. You put the swaddle on, you turn the white noise on, and then it's time for sleep. So following a routine like that, where a baby knows, I'm gonna eat when I wake up from sleep, then I'm going to go into my activity. Doing that continuously is what helps a baby to develop their schedule. And it also helps to fill that caloric cup a lot faster throughout the day and a lot more throughout the day, so that there's not as much room for overnight feeds if families trying to drop how many times their baby's waking up to eat overnight. So it's usually a lot about schedules that I get asked about.
This is super fascinating because, again, Amy and I and our friend were having this conversation about swaddling, because I don't swaddle her.
Okay.
And a lot because I'm like, I don't know when to swaddle her.
Yeah.
Like, I'm bad at it. I don't want to do it while she's already asleep. So I'm like, I just don't do it. And she doesn't, it doesn't bother her. Yeah. You know what I mean? So swaddling was one of the things where it's like, I just don't do it because I'm so scared. But this, she's very happy about that, obviously. But this mini routine makes a whole lot of sense, especially to do a diaper change before then they go to sleep. So then that's not one of the reasons that they wake up.
Exactly. I love
swaddle. There's also so many different types of swaddles too, which is like adds and that to your point around like information overload. Every time you look at one swaddle online and all of a sudden you go on Instagram and there's 15 ads being like, this will help your baby sleep. This one will help you. You want the arms out. You don't want the arms out. You want one arm out. You want it weighted. You want it light. You want them to be warm, but not too warm.
Yes.
Yep. Information overload.
I do kind of go into like as kids age, right? Because this, we still sit with our almost five-year-old until she falls asleep. She doesn't fall asleep on her own, even though she now claims she can. That is a trigger warning that we are about to be bamboozled into an extra long bedtime routine. But I'd love to know how you can form a healthy sleep routine as they get older.
So a lot of that is tapping into where a child is developmentally. So we know that babies, they're going to wake because they go through different milestones, right? And we know that they spend a lot of time in light sleep when they're learning all these milestones, which they go through so many milestones within those first 2 years, right? Then as a toddler, as they become toddlers and toddlers get older, developmentally, what do toddlers do? They test boundaries. So we have to expect that they are going to test boundaries, and they will especially test boundaries around bedtime. So a lot of that, number one, I say when it comes to navigating sleep routines with toddlers, take care of yourself first. Because your toddler is going to test the heck out of you, and it's going to make you question everything you've known in life. And a lot of it when it comes to toddlers is consistency and just being really consistent and boring and not dropping your boundaries when it comes to sleep is going to be like one of your, you're going to meet resistance when as kids get older, you're going to be told no, you're going to, like, all of that is normal. Like, we expect that all of that is going to happen. But when we set the stage and set the boundary that sleep is sleep and it's time for sleep, there's usually no questions asked about it, because we need to have that firm boundary around bedtime. And as babies get older, having a routine is going to, you know, keep your routines consistent. Don't rush through routines. Like, again, just staying really, really set with your bedtime boundaries. That we're doing our normal bedtime routine. We're going to bed at a certain time. You have a snack before bedtime. No, you're not having a snack when we get in bed because you already had a snack. It's time for sleep. So being really firm with boundaries.
Christina's daughter is, how shall I say, higher energy. She's spirited. She's very opinionated.
She is headstrong. She is headstrong, and she is also very negotiation heavy.
She's going to be a great leader.
Totally. And so, well, this is part of the thing about raising, you know, kids, and especially, well, I feel like especially girls, is like, I don't want to dim her light, but at the same time, like, now I'm starting to manipulate where it's like, yeah, okay, we can trade this snack, but if we trade this snack, you get one less book. So it's like, okay, you want to do business? I'll do business.
All right. I kind of like
right?
trade off. Negotiation.
Right. Teaching my husband that has been the harder part because he just gets so frustrated with it. And he does. I'm very good with boundaries with her, but he's still practicing those boundaries.
Yeah.
And so that's been interesting to watch. But what I wanted to ask you about next is, like, there are a lot of different sleep strategies out there. There's like the Ferber method. Then there's like cry it out. And like, how many of these are going to induce trauma in our children to cause them to go to therapy when they're older?
Well, if I'm honest, something will cause them to go to therapy.
Balance point. Sleep is probably the least likely thing we do to mess these kids.
Based on the research says that it does not traumatize them, right? And thank God. Yes, the research says there is that sleep training, however you phrase it, like, honestly, it's not my favorite terminology to use. Like, it reminds me of, like, training a dog. So I don't like to use that terminology. Like, and babies, technically, they don't need to be trained to sleep or how to sleep. Sleep is a biologic function, and that's how I practice in telling parents. But there are routines that we can set up to help optimize sleep and get more sleep and do all the things. But we also have to be realistic about it to know that a baby is a baby. They might wake up and crawl in their sleep because they're learning how to crawl. They might wake up, they might flip over in their sleep and flip on their tummy and freak out and wake you up because now they don't know what to do. So we have to be realistic about those things to know that sleep isn't linear. And, you know, we can't expect that we can sleep train the regressions away. We can't sleep train the illnesses away. We can't sleep train or Ferber or cry it out, like any of those things. Like, those things will happen because they're a baby, and that's the only way they know how to communicate is by crying. Now, to your point, again, we're going back to the intuition and listening to your intuition. Babies are going to cry because that's the only way they know how to communicate. But you can listen to your intuition to say, is this a cry where my baby's saying that they truly need me? Or is this a cry that they're doing because we're making a change that they don't like? Right? And they have that right to cry. Like, if I am used to cuddling up with my mom to go to sleep, and then all of a sudden my mom is like, no, we're cutting that out. You're going to fall asleep by yourself. I would cry too. I'd be a little upset about it. So it's knowing that, yes, baby is going to cry and have those expectations. Like, people who sell sleep and say, oh, I don't do any cry it out, there's no crying whatsoever. That's not true. Like, a baby's a human being, and crying is how they communicate. So if the baby's not crying, then I'm concerned about the baby. Why is the baby not crying?
Right. I guess it's your level of how much can you tolerate the discomfort of hearing a baby cry.
Yeah. And just making change. Like, change is uncomfortable. It's very uncomfortable. And so is watching a baby cry. And this is why the process that I use, we get as close as possible to a baby feeling comfortable in their crib space where the crying is minimal. Like, we can reduce how much your baby's going to cry, but I can't say for sure that there's going to be no crying, because I don't know. Like, you know your baby best. Your baby may very well cry, and you might know that your baby's going to cry. And the one misconception, too, is that we kind of have to do this all or nothing approach when it comes to sleep. Like, it's either I'm helping you all the way to sleep or I'm not. It's either I'm feeding you to sleep or I'm not. It's either I'm rocking you to sleep or I'm not. And you have to do it all on your own. Like, you can support a baby in a crib. Like, you can pick your baby up and comfort them if you know that, like, they're having a hard time with the transition. So this is where I reframe sleep training to sleep learning. and treat it like a baby's learning how to walk. Like, we're not training them how to sleep. We're training, or we're helping them learn how to fall asleep in a different way than what they're used to. And you can be supportive through that process. You can give them reassurance. You can do all those things. So it's not such a hard transition for you and a hard transition for baby. You can validate them. You can coach them through it the same way that I'm here coaching you as the mom through it. Like, you can coach your baby through it as well.
How do you go about actually helping parents feel more confident? Like, when you talk about empowering them or locating their gut, what does that look like when you're talking with them, when you're asking them questions?
So I ask a lot of questions about the baby. I want to know as much as you know about the baby. I want to know as much of it as possible. And usually throughout the process of us working together is where you see a lot of the roadblocks and a lot of the challenges that families can meet throughout the sleep process. And then it's a lot of reminding, hey, remember you told me that your baby loves to do X, Y, Z. Why not try that? You try it and it works. That is a huge confidence booster. Like, having these small micro wins throughout the whole process and then just being there almost as a cheerleader each time they make a win is one of the things that also helps to build confidence. So, for example, there's a family that I am currently working with. They have a 5-month-old baby. And this mom has just been through so much. Like, she feels flustered. She feels like she has no idea what she's doing. And that's all feeling, because this mom is phenomenal. Like, she's a phenomenal mother to her two beautiful babies. And one of the things, so I do these check-in calls. Like, I never do an assessment for a family and then give them a plan and say, hey, bye, see ya, have fun. Like, I'm usually there to check in and coach you through the process. And at one point of her process, she's like, the baby was, he was sleeping generally okay, but he would have these frequent night wakings towards like the early parts of the morning. And she wanted to work on independent sleep. So we were working on independent sleep, and she was feeding to sleep for all sleeps. And this mom told me that, yeah, we don't do that anymore. We're rocking to sleep. But then she went on to tell me all about these other things that were going wrong. And I said, let's pause for a second. Just a couple days ago, you were feeding to sleep for every sleep, and now you're just rocking to sleep. Let's celebrate that. I'm like, you are able. I'm like, we're in a check-in call right now, and you are sitting down. There's no baby in your arms. Like, you are having a full-blown conversation with me for 45 minutes without a baby attached to you. Let's celebrate that. And pointing out those little micro wins helps to build their confidence and helps them to feel like, oh yeah, I am doing something. I am doing something different. I am doing something right. And again, those little micro wins, like, just reminding them of the small change. Like, I feel like I see the victories without, when you're in it, it's hard to see the victories. So being that third party and being like an outer source to give them encouragement, that's something that helps to build confidence.
I love that. I feel like that's what everyone should have in their friends, in their family, is like, you go, girl. Exactly. You might not have showered today, but you know what? Like, your baby slept for 2 hours instead of one. That's amazing. Or maybe your baby didn't sleep, but you did shower and your hair looks great. And I want to tell you that your hair looks great today. You're doing a good job.
Exactly. Exactly. I've had a mom with a newborn who I said to her, you know, how about for this week? So with my newborns, I am usually with the moms for about 5 weeks, 5 to 6 weeks. And I said, this week, let's work on nothing. The only thing I want you to work on is giving yourself 5 minutes every day. That's it. I want nothing else from you. You don't need to follow any routines. You don't need to do any of, like, just give yourself 5 minutes in the morning before everybody wakes up. That is your time. And I need you to commit to that every single day.
Yeah. And it harks back to what you were talking about earlier, Ashley, is like, there's so much information out there, and there's also so many, like, you're just inundated with what you should or shouldn't do, because you're like, well, this person does this thing, or I follow this person and this is what they're doing. Maybe I should be doing that, you know? And so really detaching yourself from this perceived reality that we see on social media.
Yes. And know that social media is a highlight reel. People don't share the, can I curse? People don't share the shitty moments that are happening behind the scenes. Like, they share the beautiful journaling and look what I got to do and look what, you know, if you follow pages that make you feel inadequate or less than, unfollow them. Like, this is your permission to unfollow them. You don't need to follow anything that makes you feel like you are less than or you're not doing enough or causes you to shit all over yourself. If you are shitting all over yourself because of a Instagram, TikTok, whatever page, unfollow it. That's not your people.
Hear, hear. Preach.
Yes.
They're not your people. I love that. I want to pivot a little bit and talk about what it actually looks like to work with you. Like, what's the process?
Yeah. So usually it begins with a free consult because I don't like anyone investing in this long journey with me because we're together for about a month. Without us getting to know each other, getting to know whether or not you'll even like me or like my vibe. So we do a pre-consult. We talk a little bit about your family, what's been going on. And honestly, that it's not something that I consider even like a sales call because sometimes I tell families like, listen, it sounds like your baby's going through a regression. Like, let's hold tight for about a week and see how baby reacts. And if nothing changes, then reach out again. Like, that's usually the whole premise of that call. Like, let's see where you are now and see if there's anything that we can do or anything that you really want to work on before we dive into a 4-week process. Usually after that call, a family will book a consult. A consult lasts anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours. And that's where I usually get to really dive deep, get a full assessment of mom, of baby, of what the entire journey has looked like so far, especially if it's an older baby. I want to know like what sleep looked like in the newborn period. I want to know everything about feeding. So feeding, like talking about feeding is probably the first half of my assessment. Like, I want to know every single thing and the nitty gritty about feeding. I want to know everything about sleep, the sleep routines. What does a day-to-day look like in the life of your baby? What a day-to-day looks like in the life of a family? Because at the end of the day, like, if I don't know what your family, like, there's families who love just hanging out at home, and then there's families who love to be out and about, right? And if I don't know that there's a difference in how your family lifestyle is, then I can't create something that's personalized to your family. I'm just going to be here giving you a generic thing and hope you follow it. So I need to know everything about your family before I can actually create something that sounds manageable and workable for a family. And so usually we meet for about 90 minutes to 2 hours. After our meeting, within about 24 to 48 hours, I generate this very personalized sleep or feeding plan, depending on what we're working through. I usually give families a couple of days to absorb all the information because it is a lot of information. And then we start a check-in process. So every week, for about 4 to 5 weeks, we're meeting for 30 to 45 minutes to check in to see how baby's responding to the plan. We're checking to see how mom's responding to the plan or how family's responding to the plan. Is there anything that we need to tweak? Is there anything that's not working? Is there anything that's working really well and we need to celebrate that? So that process carries on for about 4 weeks. And then at the 4 weeks together, usually families are in a really good spot and they've graduated. If they want to continue to have some support, I offer families now a membership where they can have access to ask questions as things come up. Or even if they don't want to carry on with additional support, I offer like a refresher call. So let's say, again, sleep isn't linear. So we know that baby might go through a sleep regression. Let's say a new sleep regression comes up or a new sleep disruption comes up. A family can reach out again down the line and then I can help guide them through that new sleep transition. So I'm usually here for the long haul with families. Talk to families. Like, even now I have families that are babies with 2 years old that still come back and ask questions. I become a part of the family, usually when families work with me.
That sounds lovely. That sounds lovely. And I think it's funny, you wanting to know everything about what the baby's doing. I feel like for a mom, that's like a dream come true because like, I see this joke that's like, if you want to make a mom talk, ask her birth story.
That's my favorite thing. That's the start of my consult. Every consult starts with, so tell me about your birth. Let me hear it. And that's why the consults last 2 hours.
Makes a lot of sense.
One question that we are asking all of our guests is, what do you wish parents knew? What's something that you wish you could tell parents that you wish that they just knew going into this?
I wish families knew that you can prepare for sleep before your baby gets here. You can take time to learn about all the nuances around baby sleep. I know that we spend a lot of the prenatal period prepping for labor, prepping for delivery, but we don't really spend a lot of time prepping for postpartum. And postpartum is forever. It lasts a lot longer than your birth, and it's something that's worth preparing for. And sleep is one of those things that you can prepare for. It is expected that, you know, you're going to lose some degree of sleep when your baby gets here. But if you are able to prepare before baby gets here and learn all that you can learn about sleep while you're still pregnant, then it sets you up for success. You feel a lot more comfortable making changes.
Where would you recommend people, like, where can they start to learn from sources that aren't like bullshit, basically?
Well, me for one, follow my page.
Totally.
But also, like, take things with a grain of salt. Like, it's hard to say because sleep in general isn't a regulated industry. Like, a lot of people will present themselves as certified pediatric sleep consultants, but there's no overarching board or anyone that really monitors or, you know, ensures that all sleep consultants are practicing in a certain way. Because I am a registered nurse, I have a nursing board that ensures I'm practicing at the highest level of care. So just being really looking and doing your research at credentialing, like, don't be afraid to stalk a social media before you invest in your sleep journey. Yes. Yes. Don't be afraid to stalk a social media post, because that gives you a really good understanding of, like, how that person is. Like, get to know the person that you're working with before you really invest in a sleep, because as I said, sleep isn't linear. It's not something that you sleep train away all the illnesses and you sleep train away the regressions. Like, you have to find someone that you really jive with, and don't be afraid to ask for help.
That is one of the biggest things I think you just said. Don't be scared to ask for help, because I think when we need help and we're told that, like, no, it once you have a baby, it'll all come naturally. And it's like, actually, no, not at all. Then my mom would say that all the time. She's like, I had you. And I was like, WTF, what am I supposed to do now? And it's just like, it did not come naturally, which is crazy because my mom is the mommest of moms. Like, she will care for anyone.
Because she learned, and that's the spot that all new moms are in. You're learning.
Totally. Totally. So, Ashley, you've given us so much awesome information. I feel like everybody should work with you. Everyone should have an Ashley that goes through postpartum, because you just seem really positive and really real and authentic. And I love that about you.
Thanks.
So thank you so much for, like, sharing that with us. And can you let people know where they can find you? Social, website, okay, all that other fun stuff.
Yes. So I am on Instagram. I'm Ashley the Mama Coach. So my Ashley is A-S-H-L-I, the Mama Coach. And I have a website that is ashli-daily, D-A-L-E-Y, .themamacoach.com. That's how you can learn all about my services and how to work with me. And you can book a free consult call with me to see if we're a good fit. And that is where I am.
Amazing. Thank you so much. We've loved having you.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for hanging out with us today. If you liked what you heard, or if you're just like, okay, these are my people, don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a review.
And if you want to keep the combo going, come find us on Instagram @whatiwishiknew_.
We'll be back next time with more expert interviews, real life stories, and a couple of laughs. Until then, remember, we're all in this together.